have been invited by Captain Weiss of the Fort Wainwright, and there will be a ski parade. If any one of the
George Wang from Hong Kong, president of the International Students Club at the University of Alaska.
And they will give us transportation. The ski parade will be on Saturday from 9 o'clock in the morning to 11:30. I believe that it's a very spectacular event, and if anyone wishes to go, please raise your hand. Kai, how about you? Would you like to go?
Well, I have a class at 7 morning, so I don't think...
Kai Dai, another student from Hong Kong.
All right, in case you can make it, in case you...
How
about a Caroline?
I think I can make it, but I want to ask a question. Is there any special type of dress you are supposed to wear?
Caroline Okadara, a student from Nigeria.
I think it is nice to wear the dress where you come from, from your country. And if it is not convenient to you, you can wear any kind of a dress. There is no particular demand for that. Sean, would you make a report as to the program that we are planning to have?
Yes. We will have this program at the new auditorium, Lathrop High School, on May 17th, Sunday. And at this program, the club in the Fort Wainwright and the civic club in Fairbanks will help us, and they will advertise the program, and they will sell the ticket. Also, the Sarapanese club in Fairbanks will help us on this program.
The last voice you heard belonged to Sean Kong, a student from Korea. Sean's name is really Sok Chang Kong, but he uses Sean to make it easier for his English-speaking friends to pronounce his name. This program is about Sean and his life at the University of Alaska. The university is located near the center of the large state of Alaska. The campus is 4 miles north of Fairbanks, a city that came into prominence during the Alaskan Gold Rush. The university is just 120 miles south of the Arctic Circle. Winters in the Alaskan interior are long, stretching from October through early April. During December, the Fairbanks area has less than 4 hours of sunlight each day. When the Alaskan climate is considered, one question that is always reasonable to ask is this one the university's president, Dr. William R. Wood, had for Sean.
What attracted you to come into the far north, to this University of Alaska?
Well, I lived in Seoul, which is the capital city of Korea, and I didn't enjoy this crowded city. So, well, I felt like to get out from the urban society.
Well, if you were escaping from a large number of people, coming to Alaska is a good thing, because we have a pretty sparse population up here. What was the program of instruction that you had in mind when you came here?
I thought in my mind to study biology at the time, but since I came here, I have changed my major fields into mathematics.
I've always wondered from students who come from such great distances as you have come, what your first impression of this new land of Alaska?
Well, in Korea, when I heard about Alaska, well, I didn't know about this improvement in Eskimo society. And since I came here, I surprised very much about the way of Eskimo life. I thought they really live in the igloo, on the
snow house, ice house, what you call. But
and I suppose you had the popular concept that Alaska was just covered with snow and ice at all times.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Must have been a surprise to you that here in the interior we get very little snow down in the valleys.
And for another thing, I thought it's really cold up here, but well, it's practically it's not such a much difference from the climate in North Korea and the climate in Fairbanks, this area.
Yes, here with a climatic condition which gives us extremely low temperatures, but very little wind and very little humidity, you find the cold penetrability factor is quite different from regions where you have high humidity and high wind, even though your temperatures may be somewhat higher on the thermometer. Well, that's an interesting observation to make. I think all of us have experienced that when we came to Alaska.
And the best thing I found was the people up here are very, very warm-hearted. And
how do you mean?
They like to help people. And I feel like we're a big family here in Alaska.
Well, do you have anything specific that you could use to illustrate this?
For instance, I was sick in 1962 in summer, and I had TB, and I didn't have enough financial background to support myself when I was ill, when I was in hospital. But people up here, they several organizations gathered the money and they helped me to go to National Jewish Hospital in Denver. So finally I recovered my disease over there. And I was very happy when I returned from Denver to Alaska again.
It is a warm-hearted people. I found it so. I sometimes visit remote areas in Alaska, some of the villages and some of the small coastal communities, and I ask myself, what is the reason for the existence? And about all I can come up with sometimes is that perhaps they exist to show the rest of the world what true hospitality means.
I didn't know in my life about this warm hospitality, but I just found about the warm hospitality in Alaska.
Part of it, I think, is the fact that there are a small number of people here, about a quarter of a million in a very large state of 365 million acres of land. And as a result, there is a great deal of interdependence among the people. At the same time, there is a rather fierce spirit of independence. Everybody feels that he can take care of himself, but he's always willing to have a hand out for a neighbor and to help whenever help is needed. I rather like this way of life myself. I enjoy it.
We don't have many foreign students here, but we had a problem in English speaking. For English language, we didn't have enough background over there before we come to Alaska. But on this campus, these faculty members like to help foreign students personally. Or, for instance, Mrs. Jones, the director of the registrar, has helped me for 3 years for my English and for everything.
John, I wonder if you'd mind saying that in Korean.
Yes. 제가 이 대학으로 와서 여러 가지 언어와 풍습과 식사에 곤란을 받았는데 이 대학에서는 교수 되는 분들도 외국 학생을 개인적으로 도와주는 것을 아주 큰 영광으로 생각하고 있습니다.
그래서 제가 생각하기에는 만일 제가 다른 대학으로 간다 것 같으면은 이와 같이 훌륭한 교수 되는 분들을 찾아볼 수 없다고 저는 생각하고 있습니다.
But thank you very much. You have an advantage over me. I cannot speak Korean. Do we have anyone on campus who can speak Korean?
Yes, there is one professor from Korea who is Dr. Paul Kang. He teaches economics.
Yes, he's been with us, I believe, 2 or 3 years now and doing a very splendid yes. job for us.
Dr. Woods, could you explain about the brief history of the University of Alaska?
Well, as perhaps you know, University of Alaska is a rather young institution. The real beginning, I suppose, was in 1907 when Theodore Roosevelt, then President of the United States, withdrew 4 sections of land. This is about 2,560 acres. For a agricultural experiment station in Alaska. Later in 1915, the Congress of the United States set this land aside for a higher educational institution.
Yes.
They said that they reserved this land, which at that time there were a few homestead parcels taken out of the original grant, and there was 2,560, I believe the grant was 2,250 acres total. And this was to be set aside forever for the purposes of an agricultural experiment station and a college. In 1917, the territorial legislature appropriated funds for a first building on this land. But they didn't appropriate anybody for a faculty. And there wasn't money for lights or for heating of the building. So after the building was erected, it stood vacant for 5 years. Until a second appropriation was made. Therefore, in 1922, the first students arrived. There were 6 students and 6 faculty members in that first year. In 1935, the Territorial College of Agriculture and Mining was converted to a territorial University of Alaska, and then with statehood in 1959, late 58, it was made a state university. Now, since 1935, it was a land-grant university. By this, we mean that it was one of that system of great universities that had its origin just 100 years ago when the Congress of the United States adopted a law that set aside in each state of the Union lands for the purpose of supporting a university program of instruction. A people's institution, a great free university, it was described by Congress then, which was to be accessible to the poorest boy in the land. It was to be, these land-grant colleges and universities were to be places where the ordinary people could come to receive an education that was practical and suitable for any business or profession in life. It's been through these institutions that we have spread higher education in America to the greatest possible number of people who had the ability to take advantage of the opportunity and the interest to do so. We've made them as low cost as possible so the greatest number of people have it. And many people claim that this is the unique contribution of the United States of America to education in the world. The university program was reorganized in 1960 into a series of academic colleges and research institutes, and has emerged as a rather strong land-grant university, similar to land-grant universities in each of the other states of the Union.
Well, Dr. Wood, speaking to the truth, when I arrived in Anchorage on January 1961, it was real cold and dark. So I felt like go back to Korea again if I had a round trip ticket. But I found in summer, this is the most wonderful place. Real beautiful, this natural circumstance I ever found in my life. And on this campus, this is real, very beautiful, the structure and the building. And since 1961, I find several new buildings around this campus, like a power plant, a new dining hall, and a gymnasium, which has a swimming pool and lecture halls. This has developed within 3 years. And do you have any mind how fast this university grow in future? Can you tell me that?
John, I think the growth of any institution depends upon the confidence that the people who support it may have in it. The state of Alaska has obviously very great faith in higher education and supports very strongly its university. Actually, in the last 3 years to which you refer here, the state has spent something in excess of $20 million, and that's a large sum of money, on new construction on this campus. And this summer there will be another $7 or $8 million worth of construction underway. New dormitories, a new Arctic biology laboratory, a new water pollution laboratory that's being constructed by the United States Public Health Service. We have finished, of course, this great new physical sciences and engineering building in which your mathematics department has its quarters. And we think that we will increase from our present enrollment of about 1,200 on campus to at least 5,000 on this campus within the next 10 years. And we have construction plans on file with the state to take care of our needs for new libraries, new dormitories, additional dining halls, additional classroom and laboratory structures, and all of the essential supporting facilities in terms of warehouses and heating plants and power plants, water reservoirs and the like. We may well be underestimating our growth on this campus. Sometimes we think that the number of young people now living in Alaska will bring this total to closer to 8,000 than 5,000.
In the classrooms of the University of Alaska, there's plenty of coat hanging room and more than adequate lighting, since during the winter months, many classes meet either before or after the sun makes its brief appearance. When class is in session, however, things are about like they would be at any university. Sean is enrolled in Professor Thomas Mutch's Advanced Exposition class. Here's what it was like the day one of Sean's papers came before the class for comment from the class members.
So Sean, if you'll come up here and give us a brief abstract of your paper so that we have an idea of what it contains and what we're going to attack.
Until Dr. Wiener did not create this subject of cybernetics, the controversy between the mechanists and the vitalists was a very live issue. But this is not true because of this cybernetics. Well, according to the Dr. Ashby, McClough, Walter, and Wiener, this cybernetics is concerned with the metaphysical beliefs. The subject of homeostasis in cybernetics means the equilibrium level of activity in an organism, and the concept is composed of the information, regulation, and survival in biology. The purpose of this cybernetics is adequately differentiate between the behavior of living and lifeless things.
Now, questions?
I just have a question. I'm always full of questions. My first question to Chan is related to his introductory paragraph here. And I'm wondering, by the statement that he makes up to the present time, which you will see there in the first paragraph, are you referring, Chan, to the that ultimately a machine will be invented that will be cleverer than the man, the monk in this case?
Well, this was one of the this is not a true story. I just quote it as an example, you see. It's kind of a joke.
I think the question, just from the way this is stated, do you think that at any time a machine will ever be able to make a monk who can prove something?
Well, according to my personal belief, I don't believe so.
On your last sentence in here, and it says an important function of cybernetics is bringing together the idea from related fields of study. I kind of question this, putting it the last sentence in the paper. Earlier in the paper you said that one of the functions of cybernetics was to relate sciences. Don't you feel you're kind of repeating yourself by saying that again?
Well, I think the last sentence means the ideas from a different subject means one subject related to the living things, the other subject related to the lifeless things.
Do you think there's any separation there? That cybernetics, there are areas of biological science, areas in the science of living things that cybernetics doesn't apply to. You pretty well prove that there are areas that it does in maintaining homeostasis. But are there other areas besides that have nothing to do with this?
Well, as far as I know, this cybernetics is concerned with the machine and animal, which means mechanics.
But
homicide.
Is this the animal only? Is the animal only a machine in this sense, or are there some parts of animal behavior that aren't covered by cybernetics too?
Well, I think so.
In other words, there should be really, to present this fairly, there should be more pointing up of this. No machine has invented a monk that could prove anything at all. That this isn't everything. This is only one study of mechanics that is enlightening in terms of living things. Some of what it says applies to living things. You haven't reached that point in the conclusion.
Well, I'm not sure for that point.
But the introduction, this first paragraph, the little story of the monk who invented a machine that could prove the existence of God,
yeah,
seems to indicate, yeah, that this is where you're headed.
Well, I meant this introduction simply to get attention to this paper. Well, I don't think this is a true story. I quoted this from a certain book. This is kind of a joke.
Yeah.
And I don't think any monk invented a machine. This is not a true story.
No,
this
I realize.
Just like a tale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I realize that, but the point of the joke is that while a monk can invent a very ingenious machine,
yeah,
the machine is always less than the monk because the machine could never do the reverse. You could never get a machine inventing a monk. And it seems to me that this is what you basically feel about cybernetics, that as much as it can discover, as a man-made invention, as much as it can show us about the behavior of animals and even humans, it still isn't able to account for everything about them.
No.
You can't build a cybernetic machine that's going to be able to turn around and create a man.
I don't think so.
Could you build a machine that would replace a man, not just create him, but replace him?
Well, this is what the cyberneticians believe in future. It's going to be happening. For instance, here, Dr. Ashby's homeostasis shows certain organism, which is built by machine, the part of machine, but it acts like a real organism. So they believe, or someday these machines can walk as well as living things.
Sean graduated in June with a Bachelor of Science degree in mathematics. He hopes to continue his academic work by pursuing a master's degree at the University of Alaska. This program was produced by KUAC in College, Alaska, for the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.
At least, roughly. In other words, of every question, the question is to be asked, under what conditions, with what methods, and with what safeguards of reliability are the data needed to answer it to be obtained? And this principle is to be applied wherever inquiry is seriously undertaken, whether in the laboratories of nuclear physics, the courts of law, the church, the school, the office, home, or anywhere at all. Whether the problems involved are classified as technical, ethical, moral, political, educational, personal, or in some other way, it is hardly to be expected that effective discussion of them can be carried on by means of vague or meaningless questions to which only equally vague and meaningless answers can be given. There are no realms of discourse where the basic rules of talking sense can be profitably set aside. What this could mean for the classrooms of the world, if taken seriously, may be exhilarating or staggering, even threatening, depending on the loyalties, commitments, and vested interests motivating one's point of view. But the indicated changes in educational objectives and procedures would hardly seem difficult to achieve, given sufficient interest in achieving them. As Stuart Chase has so pointedly put it, the rudiments of straight thinking are not hard, they are just unusual.